Feral Audio.
It's time for another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Oh, hi, I'm Drew Droege. Why not? Wouldn't it be weird if I weren't? Oh, you guys, I'm going to just say some things. I'm going to say some things right now and nothing of importance. Don't worry about it. But what are these phrases make you think of? All right. Last act. Spellbound. Give me a kiss. See you later. Whisper of death, scavenger hunt, slumber party, the wicked heart, final friends, chain letter, the last vampire, Christopher Pike books. Oh my God. I was obsessed with Christopher Pike so much from like, I want to say ages 11 to way too old. To this day, I loved his writing style. The late 80s, Last Act was the first book of his that I read. And it's all about the theater. And a girl gets shot on stage and she she's really killed. Then who killed her? They were always like a group of really sexy friends and someone's murdered or someone's missing. Or maybe they're sick. Or my guests that I'm going to have on today, Lindsay and Kelly, they have a whole podcast about this. It's called Teen Creeps, and you've got to listen to it. It's on Feral, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But they were talking about the book Monster, in which the kids turn into monsters. And I remember reading that and loving it. It's just such delightful, perfectly written trash. And I alternated between those books and Stephen King and Bret Easton Ellis, and it was all kind of wrapped up in this like you know sense of like beautiful people and terror, and I sort of imagined this life through these characters. I always saw myself in these books. I always cast myself in one of the roles, and I sort of lived this fantasy life, as I think you know a lot of us do at that age. But I was I had a pretty lovely upbringing, but I was also like very bored and wanted very much for there to be a murder among the town. And I was in eighth grade, I remember, and we did this weird thing called Science Olympiad, and you would just like compete with these other schools and just do like, you know, chemistry equations. Oh my God, I did that and I got excited about it. Believe it or not, I did. And I, the year that we went in eighth grade, I just decided that, you know, my friends and I, we were like the final friends, and I gave us all alternate names, and I made everybody walk around with name tags that were not their own names, and gave them identities, and, you know, and someone was rich and someone was sick and, you know, and someone was ethnic. I don't even remember what I was assigning them, and I made them play these roles, and I was like a tyrant of a director. And then I made everyone convince the other teams that someone had been murdered at our school. And this Science Olympiad was a day long. It wasn't like I was there for like months. I was there for a day, and we were there just doing, you know, math and science competitions. But on top of it, I wanted drama. I wanted the soap opera. I wanted, you know, people to fall in love. And because none of it was happening in my life, I had zero romantic interest at all through high school even. And I just wasn't interested in that. But oh my God, on the pages of Christopher Pike books, I so was, and I so loved them. And you know, I would love to thank him for the countless hours and hours of fantasy that he provided for me. And and I can't wait to talk to these two incredible guests who are completely wrapped up and have devoted an entire podcast to the world of YA novels before 2000, before things got ruined. Let's have a show. Well, hello. I'm sitting here with Kelly Nugent and Lindsay Kaytai. How are you two?
Oh my God, so good. Thank you so much for having us on the show.
Oh my God, thank you for being on the show.
I second that.
Oh, it's so lovely. Mm. How's your Friday going?
Mm.
I love that we started with, I'm so glad, and then it immediately went into like this sort of...
Well, I've been texting a lot with Mother this morning.
Oh, yes.
Mother.
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 I love you call her Mother, not my mother or mom.
I've always thought that Little Edie is my like spirit animal.
Okay, okay,
so I'm very
sure.
Like, ah, Mother.
Mother's here. But Mother texts.
She does text.
What are you and Mother texting about today?
Well, oh my God. She's trying to plan this trip to my sister. Okay. Let's back up a little. So my sister just won this this fellowship to go study the architecture of like various international locations.
Whoa, that's so cool.
Yeah, she's a very talented architect. She entered and won, and I made a huge drunken spectacle at her at her like ceremony. I was sitting next to the runner-up and screamed, "You're the best, Denise," when they announced it, and she was like, "Kelly, stop." But so she gets to go, she's going to go to London is one of the places she's going.
Uh-huh.
So my mom was like, "Well, we can just make this a family trip." Which is a nightmare.
Well, yeah, it's like she's there to work.
Exactly.
And she's not there to play. And, like, she doesn't get to play and go visit Big Ben and go and get to do all the things that the rest of you do. So it's not going to be great for her.
It's not.
And also, like, let her have that adventure.
I know.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
something
idea.
That... Well, so my parents don't understand that ever uh-huh. when it comes to us. But so then my mom's like, well, okay, we'll just... We'll do a trip to Ireland and then pop in and visit her. So I was like, fine. And she texts me the dates, and it's 20 days. And I was
what?
Like,
what?
I was
oh
like,
20
God.
Days.
Good God, no.
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 And like, first of all, how are you going to pick up your life?
Exactly.
And does she think that you can just like get 20 days off and go and just
listen,
hang out in London? I mean, that sounds
lovely. She's a woman of leisure.
Yes.
She
I
does
get
not
it.
Understand. That I'm like, if I am not working, I do not get money.
Right,
I
exactly.
need to work. And she's right. like, well, you can just throw it away and go to London.
Also, does she know that we have a podcast that we have to record?
Oh, so rude.
No, so rude.
Honestly, I you know what? I said, I haven't talked to Lindsay yet. I can't give you the date.
I have
well,
approval.
Well, it is hard with our parents a lot of times. They don't really understand what we do.
No.
And they don't. And I know the perception is that we're not that busy because we have such crazy weird artist lives mm-hmm. and so it's always like I've got but it's like no we're insanely busy because we have to work many jobs to make the money and then do a lot of things for free
yeah.
in order for the experience and the exposure and you know and occasionally you get like a really great acting job that pays a lot of bills and that's really nice and then a lot of times you don't so
yeah
but then you know randomly I'll have a Tuesday I talked about this a few weeks ago I had a whole full Tuesday off and I just met a friend
what
and
a dream
and we drank all day and it was like whoa how lovely but then sometimes my Saturday is packed from, you know, 6 a.m. through the night. And that's just the way our lives are. So it's not like we don't have a 9-to-5. And I think it is hard sometimes for people to understand, like, oh, just don't, you know, just pop over and do that thing.
Yeah.
And stop doing your little projects.
Exactly.
Right. And everything
exactly.
is kind of seen as like a little, you know, and they don't really understand. And they, a lot of times they don't really, and it's fine. I've long given up, like people, you know, they're trying to understand and I don't care, you know, but it is hard when I try to explain it. And I can kind of hear this, okay, well, we'll see you then.
Yeah. Well, we just, okay, actually, there was a thing that happened. I visited my mom for Mother's Day.
Uh-huh. And where does she live?
They live in the South Bay, so they're
okay,
close.
Okay, okay.
And so a little while previous to this, I discovered that she has been lying to all of my family on
oh,
her
yes.
side,
yep.
telling them that I'm a lawyer.
What?
Because I was
she
2
was a
years
it's
ago.
Not that insane.
Oh, okay,
but
okay.
I quit 2 years ago and have been a voice actor.
Uh-huh.
And... she has actively been telling. And I discovered this at a huge table when my uncle says, are your bosses nice? And I'm like, huh? And my mom goes, just say yes, just say yes. And I was like, oh.
Oh, no. Mom.
I know. And then, so we, like, got in this huge argument on Sunday. And she was like, fine, I'll tell your grandpa. I'll tell your grandpa. And she tells him. And I have no idea what he thinks about it. And I don't really care.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know your family at all. But I would imagine your grandpa would be fine, right? He would probably be like, great. Or I don't know. I mean, I know when things skip a generation and, you know, I feel like, you know, with my grandparents, you know, have a vague understanding of what I do, but they're, I mean, my grandparents are in their late 80s and they're like, follow your bliss, do what makes you happy. My grandfather is saying that all because I have some younger cousins that, and he was like, what? We were talking the other day, I was talking to my 88-year-old grandfather and he was just like, I want to tell everybody, do what makes you happy, like find a job that you look forward to. And it's like, that's the wisest advice. And this is someone who's like looking back on a long life and he has loved his life and he was very passionate about what he did. He sold cars and he loved it. But he's like, if you don't love what you do, you need to find what you do. And also when it's like when it's your grandchildren, you're just like, I love them and support them no matter what they do because they're my grandkids.
Totally.
And I think your parents have a lot of wrapped up stuff of like, I want, you know, it may sound better.
It feeds into their identity.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And their feelings of worth with their parents.
Well, exactly. And it's all bullshit because it's like, you know what? We're all doing different things and lawyer can mean lots of different things. I know it sounds better on paper than voiceover actor or whatever, but maybe not. I mean, I don't know. There's so many layers to all of that stuff. And I remember when I started teaching improv. And when I could tell my family that, it was a huge step. I think they were like, he's a teacher.
Yes, they can conceptualize that.
And that really was like, oh, that's really great. He's teaching. And still they kind of, you know, I'm not really teaching that much anymore. And I occasionally pop over and do it. And I do love it. And I did it for like 10 years. But it's kind of hard now when I kind of go, oh, well, I'm on this writing job or I'm acting on this and I'm kind of doing this now. And, you know, and it's sort of, it still kind of feels kind of piecemeal. And I can see them be like, oh, boy, where's he going? What's he doing? I'm like, no, things are great, but it's hard to explain that to somebody. And I've always said, you know, when we're in the position of being like, you know, she plays Rachel on Friends. Okay, now I understand that. Like, until you have that job, you know, when people can understand who you are and what you're doing, it will always be confusing to people. And you might be a very successful actor and never have that one job that everyone understands. And that's fine, too. And that's really okay. And we didn't get into this to all be Jennifer Aniston, but I know for other people, they kind of will always look at it like, well, I hope you'll be Jennifer Aniston one day. And you're just like, great. I hope that for you too. For me, I just want to be happy and I just want to like, you know, make things and live a fulfilling life. And we get one life and I applaud you for having a, you know, a big, serious, you know, job to like go into being like, I'm following my art.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Well, it is. And the thing that you kind of touched on made me think of like, people of our parents' generation tend to look at life as like you're going towards a specific goal.
Yes.
And not and there isn't rather than
just
living
doing
the
hard living.
Work.
Exactly.
Living the dream currently. It's like being in it now. And it's like, I'm doing it now. Stop asking like, what does this mean?
Exactly.
Stop being like, well, this will be good for your resume. It's like, how about for my, you know, livelihood now and where I am now.
I feel like
and
grandparents, the like value was, well, do you work hard?
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas for our parents, it's like, well, are you achieving?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, not for my mom personally, but like parents on the larger.
Yeah, for the larger and larger scale.
And also like, I feel like the thought was like, what you are externally is like more of, I don't know how to phrase this, like, if you're meeting your quote goal, it's like, have you been labeled a thing as like an external?
Are you getting outside validation?
Exactly.
Right.
Versus like, are you happy and doing the thing?
And it's also
want?
Like, what, mom, what's the lesson in this? You're lying. You're lying to our family for external validation. Like, you're lying. And it's like, what lesson
really
are
it's
you?
About her.
Right.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
And again, it's like, that's a lot with, and I mean, I grew up and it was when anything, like, I would go home and I would lie to my parents about something that I did at school, but I would say that one of my friends did it just to test and see. And my mom would be like, oh, that so-and-so is so funny. I can't believe that. I love them for doing that. But if I said I did it, it would be like, Drew, you need to go over there now and apologize, which is great in a sense, but it was all about,
not associated with it.
It's about how you're perceived. It's like, it's like, I love you and support you, whatever you do, but I want everyone else to think you are, validated in some way. I'm like, no one else cares. And like, just, it's fine. Like, stop lying in order to like cover your ass and make it seem like, well, so-and-so's and,
I had a combo where it's like my mother is, or mother, if you will.
mother,
she,
darling.
She does not at all view her identity as wrapped up in my identity. So all she does is cheer me on.
Oh, that's
Whereas
great.
Whereas my
that's
dad, awesome. We yeah. were very much an extension of him. And so whatever we did reflected on him, mm-hmm. and we're supposed to live our lives more toward that goal of achieving and getting validation, because then that's something he could talk about around the office, kind of
right.
a thing.
Mm. Right. And then with your mom, was that always a thing that your mom was just always
always yeah. supportive, and then my dad always, what are your grades? What are you achieving? I understand that you want to be a writer, but deep down I don't believe in you, so maybe you should look into being a grant writer.
Oh, wow.
That is the classic. I mean, you can do it, but maybe you can't.
Maybe
so
you can't. So maybe you have something to fall back
that,
on.
And I know that he like believed in my writing skills, but he was like, you should go into like a professional, quote unquote.
Right. Yeah. And it is coming from love, and it is coming from fear. And it's like they don't want to, you know, steer you down this path. And then all of a sudden, you know, but what they don't realize is like, you're going to do what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And all they can either be supportive of it and go, I love you. And, you know, or they can, you know, judge and they can do whatever. But it's not really going to change the course of what you do. It's just going to change. It's just going to affect your relationship with that person and like how much you want to share with them and you know, and how much they'll be a part of it. And
yeah, he definitely got a lot less info about my life because it just, I knew it wasn't going to translate. I'd have to explain everything too much.
Yeah.
And I mean, I loved my dad, but he was a narcissist.
Yeah. Like, no, I get it. I mean, I totally get it. And mine have been wonderful, and they are very supportive now. It's just, a lot of it is just like, understanding how to support. And I mean, I don't have kids and I don't want them. And I don't envy anyone who has them because it seems like, oh my God, you could screw them up at any, around any corner.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I know that like you see a certain side of your kid and then your kid says, I'm going to be this. I mean, I was never the funny one at home. I was never the outspoken one at home. I'm the quiet, kind, you know, like sort of, that was me. I was always the nerdy reader. I was always reading in the corner.
Me too.
And so
I think that's why my dad was like, I don't understand this. This isn't something I've seen. Like, you have to go out there and be outgoing. And I just don't see that in you.
And that was the thing. I was always like, I was class clown in high school. And I know my parents were like, you? Like, I thought you were going to get most likely to succeed, you know, because I like was a nerd and I made really good grades. But I knew how to turn it on at school. And I knew that my audience wasn't always at home. And my dad was so big, like so much, just such a performer in himself. And my brother also, and even my mom has a lot of that, especially now, like they're very big personalities. And I never felt the need to like compete or combat any of that energy. I was the quiet, observant one taking notes quietly. So when I said I'm going to be an actor, I understand them being like, wait, you? Like, you're smart. You can do anything else. You're going into the hardest profession. And, like, you're going to be, you know, and I get it. They're like, you're going to be, like, you know, auditioning against idiots and trying out for jobs that the people that have no brain and no skills that are going to get over you. And it's going to be a lot of pain, a lot of rejection. And yes, it has. And yes, it is. And yes, I would never change or choose anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but
I'll like fantasize about choosing something else, but I simply can't pull the trigger because that's not what I want.
It's just, you know, and I mean, I think the older you get, the more you can like specify and go, oh, you know, and you get more realistic with yourself and going, oh, this is more where I belong. This is what I want to do. But ultimately, big picture, it's always been in us forever to know who we are and what we want to do. And it's just, you know, and it's weird when you have to come out to your family and tell them, like, this is really who I am and what I really want to do.
Well, that's certainly an extra Pressure.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, you know, it's something that like, and I think a lot of it is that it's not them sitting there going, you'll never win, you'll never succeed. It's just, sometimes it's like, it's just total fear.
It is. My mom has like said to me, like one of the first things she said to me when I was like, well, you know, well, I like had booked a couple things. So I was like, okay, I'm ready to quit law and move on. So that's when I told her. And she was like, well, what if you get rejected? And I was like, oh, I get
too
rejected all the time.
Yeah.
But like that was a
what if?
Yeah, I was like, what if? That's like every day.
And that's everyone. That's
yeah,
in this,
all the time. That's part of it.
Talk to anybody that's in this business. They're like, I was told no a million times.
And it's just it's one of those things where it's just like you just blink and move on.
Well, it's also terrifying to someone, especially a parent who's like, wait, you are on job interviews every day.
Basically,
and you're excited to get a job interview. And you have to go in and you get a job that lasts a day, a week, a month, a year, whatever time. It's finite. And then you have to go look for another job. And sometimes while you have a job, you're looking for another job. Mm-hmm. And that's terrifying to so many people, especially to our parents' generation who finished, they got a bachelor's degree and they worked at one job for 40 years. You know? And they're like, so they can't imagine like needing more education or needing like, you know, to mix things
bounce
up
around.
And bounce around, you know?
Yeah. So apart from it being a reflection on their identity, it's also like, well, that's not the life I want for you. Why would you do this to yourself?
Exactly.
There's such a huge emphasis on like security and like, also, there's the idea, too, where it's like once you get your job, if you work like the traditional 9-to-5 office job, it's like you just keep your head down and work hard and you're basically set, barring any kind of huge mess up or something. Mm-hmm. And like with this, it's like all of these really short term things, which you just have to keep. It is tiring to always be like, oh, well, this is always it's always looking for something else. It's always like building your career or whatever.
Right.
Which can be tiring, but that's like the life that we chose.
Right.
So it's, if I've accepted it, I don't know.
Exactly. I'm like, I've accepted it.
Adult.
And you should too. And I'm an adult and I'm going to make mistakes and I'm going to go through some rough patches, but it's like everything else. Or I'll pick something safe and be miserable all my life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I tried that. It is horrible.
And that's the other thing. That's what I'm saying. Like to your credit, you did that. And you're like, okay, that was something that.
Yeah,
that
that's huge.
It is huge. It is, and to go through all of that, and but that's awesome. That's great. goodbye. I don't know.
What a great podcast.
What a great
Charlie
podcast.
What a cherry
on
you. It.
Good luck, everyone.
My love to you and yours.
How long did you practice law?
2 years.
Oh, okay.
So I like put a little bit of effort to it.
Yeah.
I was like not very good at it, and like
it's hard to be good at something you don't care
about. Yeah, it was like I didn't care.
What kind of law did you do?
I did criminal and bankruptcy and miscellaneous civil litigation.
Okay. So, I mean, and in what part of it did you feel like you weren't good at doing?
Well, I hated doing legal research. And that's like a huge part of it is doing a ton of research and writing up memos and writing up motions. And like, I just, it felt like a really thankless thing.
Uh-huh.
And like, because the idea is like, everyone's going to treat you like shit. And that's part of it. That like being a young associate means that everyone is going to treat you like garbage and you just have to put your head down. And that's the culture. And also it's like a insanely misogynistic culture. It's horrible. Yeah.
Well, yours sounded
mine was exceptionally bad.
Particularly
bad.
Yeah.
But I think there are happy lawyers out there.
Oh, well, of course.
God bless.
No,
like,
of course.
Find your truth.
That's not the point. I mean, if that's their passion, that's absolutely what they should be doing.
And I wished it could be mine, but it wasn't.
Right. No, and there are plenty of people on the flip side that I see in this, you know, in the entertainment business. And I always say, God, I would love that person if they weren't in this business because they're so miserable doing this.
Mm.
They're banging their head against the wall. There are also people who are like really talented in this business at doing other things that they haven't been honest with themselves. It's like some people I'm like, you're a writer, an amazing writer, or you are, this great, you know, comedian, but you know, stop doing
dramas.
I don't know. Yeah. Or whatever it is. Or it's like, I mean, there are different things. It's, I don't know, you know, but it's like.
Well, I had to wrestle with that. Like, I really love performing. I don't think I'm bad at it. But that is something where it's like, I'm really having to push through and get recognition and get the next thing. Whereas with writing, that comes a lot more naturally to me. And I've had people all my life being like, you're a writer. And I was like, I want to be an actor.
But you can do both, and you do.
Yeah. And in the last, like, I don't know, 7 years, that's been my focus. Like, I've come to accept that, and I'm like, oh no, I really like this. It's just like it's very like hard.
You get older, and you can marry the things. We were like, if they're not so separate, you're like, I'm stronger as an actor when I am writing my own material, and I'm the more like me that I'll be. It's going to be the truest and most interesting.
Yeah. And if I hadn't been doing improv for so long, I wouldn't be as good of a writer.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So and improv, they really feed each other.
They do feed each other. And it really it taps you into that. And there's so many different styles. And that's another thing. People like go to one school and they bang their head against the wall because they're trying so hard to fit in with this one way. And it's like, that's just one way of doing it. And you might find some other thing. And I just, it was so interesting as a teacher at the Groundlings for 10 years. And I would see people who would be so great, but didn't fit in with the Groundlings. And I would just, those are people I would never like get rid of, but I would encourage them to leave on their own because it's like, you're never going to find your true awesomeness here. You're just going to be frustrated because you're going to be trying to fit in with this model that works for a lot of other people, but it doesn't mean that it's the answer. It doesn't mean it's the right answer. And it doesn't mean that you're bad because you're having because you're having a hard time at this style, you know? And then there are other people that just, it fit like a glove and it was like effortless for them. And it's interesting to see that. And I'm like, well, you know, there's room for everybody, and you have a long life in doing this as well. I think too that sometimes when we start out, we're like, I have to, you know, we have this idea of what making it means and what all that is. And it's like, there's no such thing as that. It's like a life of.
Well, I met you in a Groundlings class.
I know.
14
I was your teacher.
Years ago.
Was that long ago?
No, we were in a class. You were filling in as advanced.
Out.
Yeah.
That's right.
It was you and Mikey Day were like stepping
in
to fill out the class.
That's right. Was that at Heather Morgan's class?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. That was so long ago.
2003.
I remember Mikey and I were, we were working out. We were waiting on our upper levels and doing that class. That's right. Now, did I ever have you in class? Did I ever?
No.
No, okay.
No.
Because my memory of you, I'm remembering
class. But then I moved
class.
On to UCB.
Right.
So
and
I
then
just,
we've done like Tournament of Nerds and stuff together a bunch. That's so crazy. I wonder, is Mikey still in show business?
I don't know. I never hear from him.
Good luck to him.
Indeed.
I mean, maybe he's a lawyer now. I think he's probably a lawyer now.
He found his truth. Maybe he plays some sketches occasionally.
he did. I have to say, I'm totally kidding. He's one of my dearest, most favorite people, and I'm just so proud of him and think the world of. I'm just so glad the world has him now. You know what I mean? I'm so proud when I see him on SNL just like killing it. I'm like, everybody knows who Mikey is, you know, and I love it. It makes me so happy.
And I never really saw him again, but I've always like seen him doing things. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy's hilarious.
Oh, and he's a machine, and he can write. Talk about a writer who can work with anybody and churn out material with. I mean, he's a force of nature.
Or like at the same time I was taking that class, my friend, one of my best friends from college, we would drive up together and take class, and he was in a different class.
Oh, okay.
And that guy was Chris Kelly, co-head writer of
SNL. Oh, my God. How funny.
Yeah.
How crazy. Mm-hmm. And now they're working together.
Yeah. Wait, you would drive up from San Diego?
From UC Irvine. Where we were going to school.
Yeah. Right. And you guys did improv at UC Irvine as well, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day. Oh, yeah. Look at that. It's crazy.
We're all still here.
We're still here. We're still doing it. We're still
we're
making
like cockroaches.
Things happen. Mm-hmm. I know. At a certain point, you're just like, I guess this is what I will be doing for the rest of my life since I have done it for 25 years now. So,
and
okay, great.
It's crazy that the people who stick around make it. They just do.
Yeah, it really is a thing. And, you know, and if you stick around and you aren't crazy or
and
an
you
asshole.
Work hard.
And you work hard and you don't rest on your laurels.
Mm-hmm.
And you're willing to ride out the downtimes and the times you're like, I'm not really doing much right now. That's okay. You know, you do. And, you know, and it takes different shapes for different people, and everyone has a different career. And we also just sort of like realize that there's space for everybody, and it's not like a race towards this one, like you were saying about our parents' generation of like being goal oriented.
Yeah.
It's really nice to just go, oh, I can just release that need to win you know, achieve something and to even know what my career or life is going to look like. It's like I'm in it right now and I'm doing it and it's wonderful, you know. Well, I want to talk to you. I want to hear some stories from either of you. Do you, either of you have a revelation or a story or...
Well, I brought in a revelation today.
Oh, I love it.
Which is that I think this was a couple years ago, maybe only a year ago, where I realized that my main driving force or like where I come from is a place of guilt.
Oh, really?
Oh, just like total guilt for existing or taking up space or for my actions and how that affects other people.
Wow.
And I think it comes from being such like a sickly child.
Were you a sickly child?
Yeah, I was a sickly child.
Oh, wow.
Like
various ailments.
Mm-hmm. I had strep throat 9 times when I was 3.
Wow.
So I got my tonsils out when I was 4. I got meningitis in my eye
I had meningitis.
6. Really?
I had spinal meningitis.
No, you had to get a spinal tap?
Yes.
That's the worst one.
Yeah, I was 2 years old. I was a very sick child as well.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh.
That's terrible.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
I was 6 and I had it in my eye, so it was called periorbital cellulitis.
Do you remember?
My eye swelled up.
You remember it?
I remember my dad carrying me in his arms and rushing me into the emergency room. I remember being in the hospital. I remember being held down by nurses as they tried to stick the needle in me for like the billionth time because I had tiny little veins and it wouldn't stay in. So I couldn't be attached to an IV. So I remember that. I remember my dad's girlfriend giving me a little teddy bear that I have to this day.
Wow.
But then I also had scoliosis and I also had a birth defect called Chiari malformation.
What is that?
That is my cerebellum is too large for my skull, or my skull is too small for my cerebellum.
Okay.
I don't know which it is. So it was like creeping out and with my brainstem and clogging spinal fluid.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Just creating a lot of pressure in my brain. And so when I was 12, I had a skull decompression surgery where they like cut out a little piece of the bone in my skull to relieve the pressure and give it more room and drained these cysts that had formed.
Oh my gosh.
And I had a back brace for the scoliosis. And then when I was 13, I had a spinal fusion for the scoliosis. And so now I have titanium rods in my back. But I was seeing the effect that this had on my family.
Uh-huh.
And like my sister, like I got a lot of the attention because I was sick and I could see the effect that was having on my little sister. Mm-hmm. She's like 3 years younger. So here I am in the hospital at 12 and 13 and there she is at 9 and 10, just sort of like, is my sister going to die? And being like left alone with our grandmother while my mom stayed in the hospital with me and just being kind of like scared. And then my mom just having her heart wrenched out of her body because her kid was going through this thing and she couldn't help it. So it hit me a couple years ago that has really just like stuck with me, that I am like a problem everybody around me has to deal with.
Oh.
And then I also have bipolar 2 disorder.
Oh, really?
And so I've been depressed like my entire life, like as soon as I hit puberty.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I wasn't medicated.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just a mess. I was a mess for my entire life until I got the right meds. And that was like a year ago that I got the right meds.
When were you diagnosed?
2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
2012. Years ago.
And they were just playing with chemicals until they found the right one.
Because
I know it's different for everybody.
Yeah, it's so different. Psychiatrists are just guessing. They went to school, but they don't know any more than you do what you should be taking.
Sure.
Like they know the effect it'll have. They know what certain things do. But yeah, so I was initially given these meds and it was like pretty close, but not exactly. Mm-hmm. And then I would do stupid things like go off of it because you feel better and you're like, oh, I think I'm done.
Right.
I think everybody says, too,
it's like also it's so terrible how mental illness affects so many creative people.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take these meds, it doesn't make you want to be creative and you can shut down. And one of my dear friends from college was diagnosed as schizophrenic.
Oh, wow.
And for him, which, yes, it's very different, but he was like, when I would take the meds, I didn't want to write. I didn't want to play music. I didn't want to do anything. It gave me no joy. I mean, it just sort of flattened me out. Mm-hmm. And so like, I think until they find the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then, yeah.
But you have to have the commitment to find the right thing.
Yes.
And when you're on the wrong thing, it feels like that's it. It feels like that's the only option. And
right.
You're going to be like that forever. And there's no hope. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. And
that's depression too, right?
Yeah.
You feel like there's just no hope. There's no,
yeah,
that's the way it is.
Yeah, it's hard to even feel the drive to get better.
Right. Right.
And I am really lucky in what I have, because it's not bipolar one. That's the high mania.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels amazing to bipolar people. Like the mania feels amazing. You feel like you're connected and you're so creative and you're so energetic and you have all these ideas.
Right.
And so when they go on meds, it's like that's being stolen from
them.
Yes,
yes, yes. Okay, yeah, exactly.
But I'm bipolar too, which is mostly depression.
Okay.
So when I'm on the right meds, I get more creative. I'm willing to do the work.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's a real godsend. Like I'm really lucky in that way, because in the last year of being on the right meds, I've gotten more done. I've gotten more opportunities than I've ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was, like, I mean, basically 20 years were stolen from me in not knowing what was wrong with me and being just a complete mess. I couldn't function when I wasn't on meds. I couldn't hold down a job. It was terrible. So that's also another thing where it's just like, I'm this giant problem to deal with. I'm this thing that my mom needs to deal with, my dad, my sister, my boyfriend. It just feels like I am something to be dealt with.
Oh, well, it's good that you know that and know that that's not true. Like, that's not the overriding thing that other people look at you and go, oh, mm-hmm. I've got to go take care of Lindsay. Or, oh, what does she need?
Yeah.
But it makes total sense that you have that experience, that you feel that way. I mean, you've just explained it. And
yeah.
So knowing that, I think it's great to sort of like help and move forward and go, okay, well, I need to know that when I'm asking for something, I don't want to feel like I'm a huge burden. I really do need,
or,
you know.
I should give myself permission to take up more space.
Because exactly.
I think I really, like, I cut myself off from my own needs. I cut myself off from, like, feeling like I could want things. Like,
mm-hmm.
feeling like everybody else around me needed to be taken care of more than me because I'm such a problem.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, and I think that's like, really great just to demand space. And just to be like, look, this is, I have one life. And because also none of those things were your fault. Like none of those things that happened to you were your call.
Like
I'm going to be a problem.
Yeah.
I'm going to be everybody's, irritating, you know, hospital girl all my life. Like that's not your fault. Like you had zero say in the matter.
Yeah.
You know?
And I didn't feel like it was my fault exactly. It just felt like my cross to bear. And I was like, oh, well, I was just born
cursed. Like it's
cursed.
Part of you.
I was born cursed.
Like coming. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's like with me
you,
comes that.
Lindsay, you're Lindsay who is a problem.
Yeah, or it's like, I'm Lindsay with this, like, this little hat on of being a problem. Like, so it's like there is, I felt, pardon me, I felt, like, personally, like, I'm nice to be around. I didn't think I was horrible. I didn't think my behavior was horrible.
You're always nice to be around. That's good.
You're always nice
true.
To be around.
But, like, I had this thing that I couldn't help that, you know, regardless of knowing I couldn't help it, regardless of the people around me knowing I couldn't help it, still, you know, affects their life
mm-hmm.
in ways that they can't control, I can't control. And so it's like, well, how long can you put up with that?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that feeling. Like, I am understanding it, how you're describing it. But I will tell you, as someone that has worked with you closely, that you are a delight to work with and a delight to be around. And I look forward to working with you every time.
You.
Because I don't look at you as someone that just takes up space. In fact, I look at you as someone that always has something very valuable to contribute and, like, is great to collaborate with. And I'm always excited to see, like, what are we going to come up with next?
Thanks.
Which is, like, awesome. And I also admire you as a writer and as a performer and as a person. So that's great, too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But, like, the problem is that I know my friends don't have to deal with that. It's my family and my boyfriend.
Right.
They do have to deal with, like, me crying all day and not wanting to go to work. So it's like my friends don't see that and I don't feel like there's a problem for them. But, like, and particularly with my boyfriend, and he's never he's only been supportive and wonderful and helpful, but it's so hard for the people around the person who's depressed, because even though it's not their fault, like, they deserve happiness too. They deserve to have a life that's not about the other person. And so that's always been like another guilty feeling that I have.
And do you feel, I mean, isolated in that way, because you feel like from your experiences, you know, do you feel like it's like in any way separate from the rest of the world, because you've had to like be like you against, like, I have to stay alive. I have to survive. I have this one thing to deal with now and then this other thing.
Yeah. Or I'm putting up this emotional wall to protect you.
Yes.
Because I want you to feel like you could leave me at any moment and I'll be okay without you. But like, and I want you and I love you, but you don't deserve to have to build your whole life around this bullshit. And so I think
to be the devil's advocate, like, that's part of the deal. It's like about you know, in dealing with any relationship and taking someone on, it's not always awesome, beautiful puppy dogs and rainbows, and
right,
it's part of the thing where you're like, you know, when you love each other, you take on each other's shit, and it's like a thing where you go, oh, this thing, you know, and it's just like anything else. And I think we have the stigma around mental illness is that we're embarrassed to, you know, and to admit it or to talk about it. And it feels like something, just like snap out of it and get happy. You look down like,
And I'm trying to talk about it more and more.
And no, I think that's great. And I think you have to. And I think it's also like, just know that like, this person's aware of what the deal is. Your boyfriend's like, I get this is part of the arrangement, and he's there to take care of you, but also to deal with that. And I think you can't worry so much about him. I mean, it's so lovely that you do, but it's also like a thing where it's just like with anything else, you're just like, look, if I have cystic fibrosis, it means that, you know, you turn me over and pat on my back a couple times a day. I don't know why that's my example that I'm giving right
well,
now, but
it's a hard one.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like a thing where you're just like, that's part of the thing. It's like if you're, you know, just like a diabetic, or, you know, I have cancer or whatever it is, like, it's just, it's part of the deal. And it's the messy, scary part of being with someone and opening up to someone, and, you know, and being, you know, is the vulnerability of being like, I'm not perfect. I'm not, you know,
well,
awesome.
And then I think an additional problem, like, because I was like, always trying to like, here's the door. If you want to take it, it's okay. That just created the additional problem of like, why are you keeping me at arm's length all the time?
Yeah. Well, that's my fear with me. And it's like, I think a lot of my issues come from being a very sick kid. I was born not breathing. I was in a hospital immediately. I was in incubator immediately when I was born. And then the first two or three years of my life, I was in and out of hospitals, and I had spinal meningitis, and I had a hernia. I had a hernia. Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had several, and I don't even know how, like, I was just always sick and in and out. And then I got healthy, you know, and I was, you know, I've been healthy since then, but I feel like there was always this thing in me of feeling like, okay, it's me versus the world. Like, I have to survive. I have a purpose. I have this greater calling to do this thing. And, because I could have and should have died or been retarded or deaf many times when I was a kid.
My reaction.
but I don't know that that's necessarily great, because it makes me very much feel like an island sometimes, and I'm so individual that I forget that I need people and that I want to be with someone. And then I have this, in theory, want to be in a relationship, and then but I don't do anything towards it. And then there's part of me that's like, oh, you have to like maybe like someone, as opposed to just like the idea of someone, or like of a relationship, you know, because I'm always like, I'll figure this out on my own. And, you know, and I feel like I've always just been that kid who was like, I'll be in my room reading, you know, I'm going to be figuring things out.
That
and
was
I'm going
to,
you know, and I'm like, I'm going to, and I would, you know, in small town North Carolina, I'm reading about New York and LA and I was like, I'm going to live one of those places one day, and I'm going to have this. So, like, I always knew this sort of thing, but I never really, like, it's always hard for me to lean on someone, even for the smallest things. I'm always like, oh, God, I have to, you know.
So it's like the same with result, different motivators.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And it's like, and so when it's like, you know, and I have so many great friends, and which I'm very lucky to have. But then I'm also like, when I look towards like really dealing with myself, I'm just like, it's very hard for me to admit my imperfections and be vulnerable around someone, mm-hmm. and to sort of be not just physically naked, but emotionally and spiritually naked around someone as well, and go, I just, you know, and I mean, that's why I love doing this show, because I get to be that way with a lot of people and get to do that. But it's like, yeah, on a personal level, it's hard. And it's something that I definitely have walls up. And I think that, you know, I've never been needy. And I have a problem with needy people. I'm like, God, you're needy. Yeah. Like, I think so many people are needy. And it's my problem that I just think, I'm like, no, people just maybe like you and maybe want to talk to you. And I'm like, what do you want? What do you need? And I'm like, I realize that I can get through that sometimes. And I, you know, and it's like, just because I don't understand people who need people. I don't understand it. Because it's just, you know.
Slightly different words.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Today's show is brought to you by Bombas.com. Get $12 bounty per order at getbombas.com/feral. Bombas is an online retailer of premium, high-performance athletic leisure socks for the whole family. These socks have been engineered and designed to look better, feel better, and most of all, perform better. And they're all about comfort. I mean, these are such comfortable socks. You will love them on your feet. They are also high-performance athletic socks, so you can work out in these things. You can be leisurely or active. Simply put, they are the most comfortable socks you will ever put on your feet. You may not know this because I didn't know this, but actually socks are the most requested. They're the number one most requested item in homeless shelters. So with Bombas, if you buy a pair of socks, Bombas will in turn donate a pair of socks to homeless shelters. And they've given almost 1 million pairs of socks to date. It's pretty amazing. You also get 15% off your first purchase of 4 or more pairs, plus free shipping. That's fun. For you, the listeners of Minor Revelations, Bombas is offering an opportunity to get $12 bounty per order at bombas.com. To get $12 bounty per order, go to getbombas.com/feral. Again, that's getbombas.com/feral to get $12 bounty per order. So anyway, but that's great to know that you are coming from a place of guilt and just to acknowledge that and moving forward, because you can't just pretend that that's not what's happening, you know? And yeah. I think you can't just go, oh, well, forget about that. It's like, no, that's just so you know, that's where I'm coming from. And just be aware of that when it kicks in and yeah. You're just like, wow, I don't know why I'm like so embarrassed to, you know? But yeah, I will say like, I mean, I was going to say this earlier when Kelly was saying how great you are to work with, like what I always love about you in the Tournament of Nerds show, which is this show, you guys go see it. It's midnight at
it's
UCB.
Tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. this will be aired in a couple weeks, but it's always, is it a certain Saturday of the month?
It's the third Saturday of the month. Okay, so every month.
If you're in
UCB
LA,
Franklin.
Yeah. UCB on Franklin. There's a show at midnight called the Tournament of Nerds, and it's one of the most fun shows to watch, and I've never been a contestant in it. I'm terrified of doing that. I'm always a judge.
It is the most stressful thing.
But it's got to be. But basically, you present a case as if you're a lawyer almost for how your client would beat this other client. So mm-hmm. You're the spokesman, and you're dressed as like this character. Mm-hmm. It's like Santa Claus versus Freddy Krueger. Mm-hmm. And so someone comes in and says, "Well, Santa Claus, you know, has you know all this size and is big and jolly." And has the love of all these children. And you could say Freddy Krueger has the souls of all these children.
It's a really good mashup, actually.
I want to see that, right? And so then they battle, and then judges determine based on the thing who gets to the next round. So it's super nerdy and wonderful, and it's just about – and people get so deep with it, and there's some really wonderful ones. And didn't you do – one time you did Lisa Frank.
Yeah.
Oh,
my God.
It was one of my favorite things, those Lisa Frank stickers. Thanks. And I was like, I love you forever for doing this. But you are so thorough. Like, you present such a strong case every time for these people that you are – and it's like you have done so much work on these people. And it's so funny – Because the more specific you are, the funnier it is in that world. Because it's like, oh my God, yes, it's exactly right.
It's funny that you say that one too, because I wasn't even really arguing Lisa Frank. I was pretending to be a Lisa Frank factory worker.
All I was doing
was talking about these fake, horrible working conditions that I was making up.
Oh, that's right. That's so great. I also just want to, I love the idea that like working in this sticker factory is mm-hmm. like, worse than like, you know, handling nuclear waste.
Exactly.
Like it's just so horrifying. And you're making these gorgeous unicorn rainbow, you know, sort of mother of pearly, you know.
Yeah, like
sort of
I was getting gnarled hands because I was having to put googly eyes on things. Yeah, it's a fun one.
I love it. I love it.
It's always fun when you judge too.
Oh, it's so fun to judge. It's just, I love sitting up there and going, okay, you, and then you. And then sometimes you'd be totally arbitrary. And sometimes you'd be really serious about it.
Yeah.
And Mark Andreyko, who's done this show before, who does it every month. And mm-hmm. he gets so into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's
really
super fun.
Hard-nosed.
Yeah, exactly. So Hal and Justin are wonderful and it's just a great show. So check that out.
Check it out.
Kelly. Hi. Do you have a story or a revelation or
this? I'm pretty deeply embarrassed about this, and I don't think
I love it.
It's so small and so stupid, and I don't think I've ever told anybody about this because soon as it finished, I was like, oh God. so the other, this is like. It's just
like
I love
it when Kelly's about to tell an embarrassing story because she has to start and stop like 20 times and then she'll like put her hands over her mouth and be like
oh my God, I love it.
Okay. So
there it is.
Okay. So all right. I have a home studio at my house where I record VO jobs from time to time.
Okay.
And this was like, I was already doing something that was like a little bit thirsty, which was I was like basically like bugging people on Facebook Messenger to review Teen Creeps on iTunes.
Which I'm going to talk about in a minute. They have an amazing podcast. It's on Feral. It's called Teen Creeps. And it's all about young adult novels. Christopher Pike, R.L. Stine. Oh my God. Amazing. We'll talk about it at the end. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So I messaged this guy that like... I like knew in law school and like we were like kind of friends and whatever. So I message him and he responds back and he's like, great, I'll do it. And then I get this like video, like it's like FaceTiming and I'm like, oh God, what's happening? And he's like messing with his hair. So I can tell that like he's not expecting it either. But I didn't realize, anyway, so I just like close it and like throw my phone and I'm like, ah, fuck. And at that point, I was like laying down on my bed in sweats. The reason why I brought up the home studio is a lot of times I don't leave my house.
Sure.
So
sure.
I'm wearing like sweats head to toe. My hair is like horrible. Like I just look awful. And so I'm like literally like laying down on my bed. Like the phone is like at my belly. So it's like from the chin up view.
Uh-huh. And so it's just the worst possible
view. It's a horrible view. I just think that he has no idea that he can see me. So I just put it down and then I'm like, and then I text him and I go, hey, sorry, I can't take this FaceTime right now. And I don't know why I lied. I said, I'm in the recording booth. And he goes, okay, well, you actually sent the request to me. So he's like, so I was confused and thought you wanted to FaceTime. And I was like, whatever. And like closed it. And we have not spoken since then. I have not talked about it. I don't know why I lied. Like, I think I do know why I lied, which we'll get to in a second.
I don't even know if that's an issue though. Like, does he know that you're not actually in? I mean,
because he saw the video
in a recording booth.
He saw a video of you lying down.
On my bed.
On your bed. And you said, I'm in the studio right now.
Yeah. So.
And so. So, and this is someone you know personally.
Yes.
Okay. And so then you're asking him to do this thing. And so then do you think he thought you wanted to like flirt?
Reconnect.
Or what?
I have no idea what he thought. I mean, maybe because we did have like the briefest of brief flirtations in law school, but it never materialized to anything and whatever.
But like, but you did FaceTime him.
I FaceTimed
him.
Happened.
That was, so that was really him going, but wait, okay, but what? You
and,
came
and
to
he's
me.
Like, but you like lied. Because like you saw this and you right. FaceTimed me. And I didn't mean to. I something had happened.
Right.
But
that happens. That happens a lot when you accidentally FaceTime people. And
yeah.
It's like, I didn't mean to do that. I don't need to see your face right now. And you yeah. know.
I mean, 99% of FaceTime requests, I ignore them. I'm like, no.
No.
Especially if it's like unscheduled. What are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do not FaceTime me.
I don't understand that either. I mean, I just, I don't come from that. Now, my, you know, 5-year-old niece has been known to do it because to her, it's like, fun, I want to see your face. And so she's done it to me before. And it's always, because I'm with my sister-in-law and I'm like, why does she want to see me? It's my niece. But I don't really understand what that's about. And yeah, I feel like you can always, I mean, is this somebody that you were in law school together? You see socially and you feel a need
I saw him. Well, we have been like weird, like on again, off again friends. Like uh-huh. we were briefly friends, I think like a couple months before that. And like I had like supported a project of his. And then so it was like, I felt okay asking him for that.
Right.
But I like the thing that like embarrassed me so much was that I lied.
Right.
Because
when you lie when you don't need to, it's like
exactly.
and you wonder like why am I lying when the truth would just serve me better, and what yeah. difference does it make?
Well,
but I also think sometimes, I mean, we all lie. Sometimes it's easier to just.
I think I know why I did lie, and it's like having to look at myself in kind of like an unsavory way, which is that like. I wanted to seem like I was working. Like, I uh-huh. wanted to seem like...
Sure.
Like, because we had no... I think it's...
Like, you were successful. And
yeah, like, yeah. I was successful. And, like, we had known each other in law school, and I
right.
think he's still a lawyer. I'm not
right,
sure.
Right, right, right.
But he...
I totally understand. When you're like, I don't want the perception is that I'm lying on my bed in my pajamas in the middle of the day
yeah.
doing nothing with my life, asking you to like my thing on Facebook.
And I'm not answering your FaceTime.
And, yeah. exactly.
and I'm not answering that FaceTime. I think a lot, a huge part, a big thing that I wrestle with a lot, just like in the social aspect of being in the creative world, mm-hmm. is that like since I'm like fairly... new to it compared to just a lot of people, I feel the need to communicate like I'm okay. Like,
yes,
I belong here.
That's so common though. And I think that's so understandable. And there's a lot of times where it's awkward. No matter how long you do it, when you run into people and you haven't seen each other, and in this business, you know, like there are people on all different levels or
yeah.
no level if you look at it that way too, which is also, you know, the same. But, you know, you do you talk about what you're working on or do you not? Do you,
yeah.
you know, there are people that you run into and I'm like, hi, how are you? I'm like, great. I just finished my web series and I finished a screenplay and I've got a meeting with so-and-so. And you're like, oh my God, please settle down. I asked how you were. But a lot of people, but just like you said, they just want to communicate that they're doing okay.
Yeah.
That they're fine, that they're making things happen, or they're insecure around you because they look, you know, and it's very strange because like it's never, I don't know, like when, you know, we have these weird lives online and we have this like this perception of success, you know?
Mm.
And so we only put out there, you know, like when things are going well, you know, for a lot of us. I mean, for me, like I post videos that I do, or, you know, if I'm on a show, and especially when the show, sometimes they say like, would you post that you're going to be on, blah, blah, blah. And so I do that, or when I'm doing a lot of live shows and I want people mm. to come. So I'm like, come to the show because
yeah.
I'm doing a live show. So, you know, a lot of times when people run into me, they're like, wow, you're doing so well. And I'm like, you know, things are great. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm happy, but I don't really feel like I don't wake up every morning going, I'm crushing it. I'm killing it. But I think there's like sometimes the perception is like, oh, you're really successful. And I want to let you know that I'm doing something too. And it's like, I don't require that from someone. I mean, I would much rather talk about anything but. And if something organically comes up,
mm-hmm.
great. Like, I don't want to not talk about it. It's not like you can't tell and talk about work at all, because that's also weird, you know. And, you know, it's like there are some people that I know who are insanely successful and you could tell that they're just like awkward to talk about any of it. I'm like, you can tell me what you're working. We can talk about this and I'm not going to, you know, but it does feel like high school in a way. Yeah. And about like, and because of what we do has no 9 to 5 beginning, middle, end.
Yeah.
I've achieved this kind of aspect to it.
You're never finished.
You're never finished. And so you feel like, you know, you want people to think that, you know, it's, and I understand the impulse from a lot of people. They're just like, they want to talk about like, I'm busy. I'm busy too. Oh my God, I'm so busy. Oh my God, we have this going on. And I think that, it also just feels good just to say like, I have work and it also, there is something mentally good about it when you're like, to look at it like a job as opposed to just like, oh, just this little thing that I'm doing,
yeah.
You know, and to say like, and to treat everything like this is work because it mentally tells your brain like what you're doing right now is your job and your livelihood and what you are doing with your life.
Yeah.
But I understand that. Also, I would say that most likely this guy is probably didn't think twice about it.
He does not even remember this happening. For a second, he was probably like, that was weird. And that was it.
Right.
Whereas like, exactly. I was like, as I'm about to fall asleep each night, I was like, you lied to that guy. But I think also like a
men
huge...
Men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
But like, I think a huge part of it too, that is that because I don't get those feelings of validation from like my family, I mm-hmm. seek it very aggressively from like my peers and friends.
I understand that.
And so it's very like, it's... Even if you take down to like even like base level, like just acceptance and love and those kinds of things, like because I don't, I've always been very obsessed with like found families as mm-hmm. like a
thing,
trope.
That's what we are all doing in our lives. We have our, you know, creative family that we absolutely. Yeah, sure.
And so like that, and then also I just feel like, it's almost like this survival instinct to be, because like we now, like in the world that we live in, ascribe, like you feel like sometimes if you mess something up, job wise, a lot of times the first thought you have is like, oh my God, I'm going to die, which is like, you're not going to die.
I'm never going to work again. I'm going to die.
Yeah. Right. I'm going to die. Which is like, it's interesting how we've evolved in that way.
Or this person hates me or doesn't respect me. And that feels like death.
Exactly.
You and know, like, this person doesn't think I'm valid or talented or funny or mm-hmm. Successful or fill in the blank.
Yeah.
And this is murdering me.
My depression, how it would manifest is I would wake, like the depressed feeling I had was like, oh, somebody I love, I did something horrible to, and they have stopped loving me. Wow. But it hadn't happened, but I had that. That was how that felt.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh my God, I have lost somebody I love. I did something horrible. I have a lot of guilt about that.
Right.
Even though nothing had happened.
Right. And it's, our brains can be our worst enemies. And we have a lot of downtime with our brains when we have, mm-hmm. we have to constantly be in our heads and think about what's the next creative idea and allow space and be okay with like not working all the time and working at weird. And so we're always using our brains in a way that a lot of people just don't have the interest, the time, the energy, the fill in the blank to ever like think about where they are and to think about, you know, and that's the pain and the itch of being an artist, that, you know, you really have to be constantly in touch with your thoughts. And it's why so many of us deal with, you know, all kinds of mental problems and issues and, you know, cause we are led and ruled by our emotions. And that's what makes us good at what we do. And it also makes us feel, you know, alone and makes us feel like, oh my God, you know, because many other people are like, I get up, I take a shower, I go to work, I come home, we have dinner, we go to sleep, you know, it's like, that's life. You know, and it's like, oh gosh, we want something more. I want to leave that life. I want something more. Well, guess what? You get something more. You get a brain that's going to tell you you're not worth it. People don't like you, you know, and all that stuff kind of creeps in. And
but that's the thing. It's like when your mind is constantly riddled by those anxieties, it's like that's something that on some level everybody
touches. Mm-hmm. Like everybody, like every single person feels those feelings of like fear of rejection or any of those kinds of things. But then when you are constantly feeling them, it does give your work like a little bit of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the thing that people can touch as something that they're consuming and then put it away when they're done.
Wow.
Which is,
I love that.
That was good for them.
Yeah, good for them. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Tell me I did good.
Thank you. You did good. You did great. You did
good
great.
Good job, Kelly.
So successful.
We win. We figured out life. Well, we are out of time.
Weirdly.
So that was a great ending. So we have figured out that we're right. We're going to take up space.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? Do it, girl.
Do it. And don't be afraid. And don't be afraid to, you know. And
you guys.
Yeah. And we are doing what we love, which is a wonderful, scary, great thing. And we're just going to keep doing it. And some days are going to be terrible. And that's okay, too. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Totally.
Totally. Oh, my God.
Well, you got to come on our podcast.
I would love to come on your podcast.
Come on the podcast. Okay.
So Lindsay and Kelly have a podcast that is called Teen Creeps, which I love the title. And
Thank you.
The artwork is so amazing.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
It's so good.
Because
it looks
like James Mulholland.
Okay. He's genius.
I know.
Because he completely makes it look like the cover of a Christopher Pike book. And you guys do a different novel every week. Is that what you do?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's sort of like a book club. I love it. I would love to come on there. And please make me read. And there's so many new Christopher Pike books.
We're not reading new things.
We're not reading his new stuff.
Anything after 2000 is sort of out of the genre in our mind.
Okay.
We might do it down the line as like a special.
Okay. And why 2000? Because of the Twilight explosion? Or?
Yeah.
Everything just got different.
We did nail it down to it went from camp to cheese, which we're not interested in.
Yeah, I completely understand that. Yeah.
So it went from, because all those books that we're reading are super pulpy.
Right.
Like kind of sensationalist.
Well, what was so
bit,
great
like,
about
seedy.
Those books was that they meant it. And that's what's great about camp is that when they're making something, they really mean it. And
there is
totally
an earnestness there that I love.
And cheese is like winking at it and going, isn't this...
feels a little manipulative.
Uh-huh.
It feels very like, I'm smarter than you, which is like, I don't need that.
Or like The Fault in Our Stars. I haven't read it, so this is all judgment on like
Listen,
what
we've
I
all
perceive
seen
in
the trailer.
But it's very like, hey, teens, I know that you're into doomed love. I'm just going to write a story that I don't really care about and you're going to eat it up.
Right. Mm. But now the whole thing is one of them's dying because there's that new movie called Everything that's coming out this weekend.
With Amanda Stenberg.
Yes. I know that's, and this is going to be in a couple weeks. So when this podcast airs, but I think that's coming out very soon or it'll be out by the time this is up. And it's always like one of them is doomed and then there's always, it's like Me and Earl and the Dying Girl and there's all this, there's like that genre
Paper
of like.
Paper Towns even where the girl just like disappears.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so
somebody gave this such a good nickname. I'm going to try to think of it.
Okay, you guys keep talking.
Okay. But like, yeah, but I know that like the stuff that, and I'm older than YouTube, but like when I was like coming of age and reading those books, you know, it was all so serious and I cared about it just like everything else. And I would go between reading Christopher Pike and like Stephen King.
Me too.
And I kind of didn't see much difference in it. And now I can look at that and go, okay, well, Stephen King is definitely adult horror. Mm-hmm. And Christopher Pike was written like as a young adult angst and all that. But there was still like, they were scary and like, you know, and there was like kids killing each other.
Yeah, they were like so gory, so like sexy.
Yes.
Like very
gritty.
Like titillating.
Yeah, they were they were all of that. So.
They definitely felt like something that like I didn't want my parents catching anything over the shoulder that I was reading. Like I'd hold them kind of close. Yeah.
I think books now are like a little too precious.
That's what it is.
That's what it is. It's like cheesy and precious.
And it's like, isn't it cute what we're doing?
Uh-huh. Kind of like mumblecore YA.
And also, like, I know, I'm sure Christopher Pike made a bajillions of dollars doing this. But I don't know. And that's what I was going to say. I feel like now it is more cynical where you're like, you can make so much money and sell it as movies.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to make movies out of these books. And there is this because of the Twilight craze and the whole thing of, you know, there's such a movement towards that. So people are writing books in order to make them into movies.
Yes.
Versus like writing books for the sake of writing really great books, you know? And so I think that's also, we just come from a more pure time, you guys.
Mm. Mm.
Well, I want to, on that disgusting tone. I want to thank my guests, Kelly Nugent and Lindsay K. Tye, for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, in unison. God, we're special.
We are precious.
We're all
dressed like piglets right now, like cute little baby piglets.
We're wearing overalls.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And like flowers are in our hair. We have buckets of raspberries.
Oh.
We're so cute. Gross. This has been another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. Thank you for listening. Have a week.